Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS political newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roering, Jack Spencer, and Mike Malott. A little later, Scott Dean, spokesperson for the Department of Environmental Quality, is going to tell us why the state has not been dropping the ball on the whole PFAS situation. He'll explain they are not a Johnny-come-lately to that issue. And also, Senator Tanya Shoemaker, a candidate for the Attorney General's office on the Republican side, will spend a little time with us. But first, guys, let's talk about favorite commercials. Well, we're going to start with you, John. What was your favorite commercial this year?
I had two. The first one really wasn't an ad. I think it was a web video that the Pro Cali Pack put out about Bill Schuette, and they showed him as a young man looking in the mirror, adjusting his tie, and kind of lays out the argument that our Attorney General has been running for governor since he was a wee lad. I liked that one a lot. The other one I liked was the one where Sri Tanadar teaches people to say his name. That introduction, I thought that was really good. I heard a lot about that ad.
The Super Bowl ad.
Yeah.
I remember that one. All right, so Jack, what would you say? I mean, we've had several on the Republican side, but is there any other one from other races that maybe stick out in your mind?
I liked the Whitmer one that is so quick, where the guy gets in the car and you can't even see. You're seeing it from the back, puts on a coffee, starts the car, and immediately hits a pothole, coffee spills, and then you just have Whitmer fix the damn roads come up on the screen. And what I really liked about it was the way they did it so cleverly. It's so short you can hardly catch it, but then if you're watching something, it pops up again in 5 minutes, it pops up another 5 minutes, and by the time you're done watching whatever you're watching, you get the idea.
So my favorite ad from this election cycle is the same race, the same subject, but I'm going to go with the Sri Tanadar ad with the pothole that can be seen up in space. I thought that was very clever and very hilarious and proved the point about how bad our roads were. Mike, you're going a different direction here.
Yeah, Maya Jones, who's a Democrat running in the 4th District in Detroit, has a nice rap video, which she's titled Run Me My Vote. And it's well done. I've seen a lot of political raps that are horrid. This is really very professionally done and very well performed.
I think you're just a fan of Motown music. I think you're a sucker for Motown.
Well, yes, I am. I am. But although I don't really understand the issues that she's laying out in there or her positions on them, I'd vote for her because of this rap. I really would.
I would agree that it was a very well done rap and certainly a highlight of this whole campaign cycle that has had some lowlights. We had some very contentious races on the Republican side, Democratic side. But Mike, I don't know if anything gets as messy as Macomb County politics for some reason. And a few years ago, it was that Pete Lucido stand Groat race that really stood out. This year, it's this clerk's race where that fission in the Democratic Party in Macomb County is just high profile with Fred Miller and Steve Bieda. And you did a little look into that for the last 2 weeks, haven't you?
I've done a few interviews there and trying to figure out what's happening there. Miller's supporters are throwing ethics charges at Bieda. Bieda's filed complaints against the Philhart Club, which has endorsed Fred Miller. Jeremy Fisher, the president of the Warren Area Democratic Club, put out a statement a couple weeks back denouncing the Philhart Club for the way that it gets involved in primaries. He says they're very, really quite secretive. The most disturbing charge he raises is that the way that they bring new members in, you have to be sponsored and then you have to have a vote of the entire club.
It's like Skull and Bones.
He makes it akin to the way country clubs kept minorities out back in the 50s and 60s. So it's a disturbing charge, but Julie Matuszek, who's the president of the Philhart Club, is very kind of blasé about these charges. This is the way our bylaws are written. This is how we operate. It's legal. We don't violate the rules. If we make a mistake running our bingos, we go back and fix them. She stands by it. It's a difference in philosophy is what it comes down to.
This David Bonier wing of the Democratic Party in Macomb County is still trying to flex its muscles and say, hey, we're the big guy here in town, even though Mark Hackle is the county executive. And he basically says, hey, I run the show here, and we think Steve Beda is a better choice. That fission just doesn't go away, Jack.
Well, you always have to remember the M in Macomb County is for messy. And if we didn't have some race somewhere in Macomb County that had all kinds of shenanigans or accusations or something going on, I think we'd all feel a little bit like we'd been deprived of something that we look forward to every time there's an election. The other thing that's interesting about these is we'll always find out afterward there were even more things going on than we found out about.
Yeah, right.
So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But I suspect that the candidates went in with their eyes wide open, probably expecting a battle.
You know that the Democrats are taking this race extremely seriously after what happened to Karen Springer beating Fred Miller in 2016. I think it's pretty fair to say that they're not going to let that happen again this year, and that whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be.
Yeah, it's got to make a difference to them. Who's the which party holds that clerk's job in Macomb County when we come to 220?
Why in 220, Jack?
The more clerks you have locally, the more secure you feel about
how these
elections go.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, sometimes I feel like, Mike, we got to run a police blotter come election season based on what we saw in the 51st State House District with Mike Mueller and Drew Shapiro. It was the battle of dueling police reports.
Yeah, it really was. Police reports surfaced by both of the top Republican candidates. Drew Shapiro has several in his background. Turns out that Mike Mueller, who appears to be the front runner, but is also a Livingston County Sheriff's deputy, had a bad night himself and was mentioned in a police report of an argument with a girlfriend that turned physical a few years back.
So we've got that race, but Jack, what race are you most interested to see the results in locally?
Well, I'm interested in what's going on in the Senate race up there in Clinton and Shiawassee counties, the 24th, I believe. Rick Jones, his district. I know because my mother lives up there in the St. John's area that it's gone right down to the wire between Barrett and Brett Roberts. And it's just almost been a day-by-day trip to the mailbox to get a new hit piece on each other.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this because, John, I think you've got a flyer here. What is this thing?
It has Tom Barrett putting the swamp first, and it's got Tom's face imposed on what looks like the swamp creature. It's just kind of funny.
Oh, that looks, yeah, he looks pretty dreadful in that. Who's paying
dreadful
for this?
This is apparently being paid for by Michigan for Traditional Values. Out of 115 West Elgin Avenue, which is what, the Michigan National Bank Tower, isn't it?
Looks like they got an old Facebook photo of him here, too, kind of giving you the Fonzie.
Yeah, looks like he's wearing some old suit, and looks like he might have been a college or a high school picture, actually, for Tom. Looks like he's having a good time. It's time, though.
He's fighting for the swamp,
yeah,
not us.
And it says, if you think Tom Barron has been fighting for you, then joke's on you.
Oh, wow. So. Yeah, well, and then there's what? You got about five more Tom Barrett ones right here.
Oh, yeah. There's the good couple from him.
Chuck Cascarelli
attacking Barnes. We've got another attack piece on Tom Barrett. Is Tom Barrett really pro-life? Question mark. Call Tom Barrett and tell him to protect young lives.
A lot of mail.
Some print companies are doing really well right now, I think.
We're going to move on to Scott Dean. He is the spokesperson for the Department of Environmental Quality. A lot of charges have been made that the state has been dropping the ball when it comes to this PFAS situation that got a fresh face last week in Parchment, where the city of Kalamazoo's water had become in and saved that community. And we're going to talk to him right now.
Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, I wanted to talk to you on the podcast to get us an update on the PFAS situation. There's been quite a bit made about the state's response to PFAS. But before we get into it, can you just give us an update on the situation in Parchment and what the state's role right now is in assisting that situation? Sure. The situation in Parchment is stable because of the work of the Michigan PFAS Action Response Team in cooperation with the city of Kalamazoo and Parchment. 3,000 people served by the Parchment water system are being protected from an emerging contaminant that they did not know about this time last week. The reason they know about it is because of MPART's aggressive, proactive statewide sampling of public water systems that we announced in May. This time last week, last Thursday, we received results in that the Parchment water system was testing above the EPA health advisory level of 70 parts per trillion. So we immediately jumped into action with Kalamazoo and Parchment officials. We were able to get folks on alternative water within 12 hours. And they're still on alternative water while we do a number of things. The city of Kalamazoo has connected their system to the Parchment system. They are now in the process of completing the flushing out of the Parchment water system. And once we're confident that the PFAS levels have been reduced below the health advisory level, then we can once again allow folks in Parchment to start utilizing their taps again.
Obviously, one of the responses we've heard is, how come the DEQ hasn't been on top of this all along? What's been the agency's response to that criticism?
Well, it's quite the contrary. The state's been actively involved in this issue for quite some time. There have been a number of things we've been doing. It's been studied in 2011. There wasn't a lot of regulation. The EPA health advisory limit didn't even come into effect until 2015, but the state hasn't waited. You know, we began testing very early on. For example, let's go give you some numbers here just to help you through it. We've just done a lot. We've been sampling surface waters in 12 and 13. We have been putting out fish advisories on lakes with known PFAS contamination that have been near air bases that used AFFF firefighting foam. So a lot's been going on, and if you want to talk about what the governor's done since the creation of the Michigan PFAS Action Response Team in November of last year, the list of achievements is quite remarkable. You know, we've identified 35 confirmed sites throughout the state associated with things like firefighting, military bases, landfills, and the like. We've done more than 4,700 samples across the state looking for contamination on these sites. And we've already overseen the delivery of alternative water or more than 1,600 households with PFAS detection. We're putting a new laboratory in. That's a $1.5 million effort. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the public water system testing is the first of its kind in the nation. No other state has done this. It's a $1.7 million effort. And because of that effort, we were able to identify the presence of contamination in the water in the village of Parchment. And 3,000 people are being protected because of MPART's work.
Now, over here at MERS, we first learned about PFAS last year when the Delaney report was broadcast over a radio program. Was that report not taken seriously, or how would you describe its handling within the Department of Environmental Quality?
Allegations that the state ignored the warnings about PFAS in 2012 are patently false. The author of the report states in that report, when he's referred to it since then, that he called it a brainstorming exercise, and he acknowledged that many of the recommendations he made back in 2012 were not feasible or enforceable at the time, given the lack of knowledge and regulation regarding PFAS. As the author noted, the report was shared around DEQ. Indeed, his report was in 2012. DEQ has been looking at the issue even before then. He was part of a group that looked at it back in 2011, and once again, based on the state of the science around this emerging contaminant, the state's approach to it was PFAS. As we all know, hardly a single state in the union is doing what Michigan is doing right now about PFAS. We're way ahead of the curve in terms of the rest of the nation on this regard. We're ahead of even the federal government.
Is Michigan unique in its exposure to PFAS?
No. The reason we've discovered so many PFAS sites in the state, the 35 active investigation sites, is simply because we are looking. There is no other state in the union that is doing such a thorough investigation into this contaminant anywhere else in the country. It's just simply no one else that's looking. That's why we're finding so many spots. If other states were as aggressive as Michigan, I'm sure you'd find them with a number of sites that they would want to address as well.
There haven't been any conclusive studies about the human health impacts of PFAS. Is that part of the reason why other states haven't really jumped on this? I mean, there could just be that attitude, well, we really don't know what it could do to us, so, you know, maybe it's just better to turn a blind eye.
Some states may take that approach, and they take a wait-and-see approach, and it is true that there hasn't been a lot of federal regulation on it. All we have at the moment is a EPA health advisory level of 70 parts per trillion. But we believe taking proactive action is the right step, and you know, we're moving ahead aggressively to learn about the extent of this contaminant in the Michigan environment. And when we find areas where the level of contamination based on past industrial or military activities is such that it shows concentrations above 70 parts per trillion, we want to protect the public's drinking water from that. So, you know, we're learning a lot about the health effects, but we think if someone has drinking water over the 70 parts per trillion level, we want to change that. We want to get them on a clean source of water.
Now, I know that this molecule, PFAS, is designed to be indestructible. So how do you get it out of the water? Without getting too scientific and geeky on me, I mean, can you get it out of the water, or you just got to drain it out?
No, the problem of PFAS is a solvable problem. PFAS can be captured through granular activated carbon filtration systems. Carbon filtering is something that's well known, well understood. DEQ has given $750,000 to the township of Plainfield near Rockford, and they are piloting a granulated active carbon system pilot to remove PFAS, and they're having good results with that pilot. So it's a solvable problem. It just takes putting the resources to it.
And how big of a problem is this in the state of Michigan? Is it something that you can quantify at this point?
Well, we have 35 active investigation sites in the state when you include the response to the parchment contamination. We're committed to going through the entire state's public water system this year. That's part of this public water system effort that we announced in May. That is going to cover 75% of the public's drinking water, since 75% of the state's population are served by these public water systems. So we're going to get a good idea on what the extent of this problem is in the state by completing this this testing program by year end. And once again, the state, through the Michigan PFAS Action Response Team, remains committed to hunting down sources of this contamination, taking action to reduce it wherever possible, and to keep the public protected.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. Scott Dean, the Department of Environmental Quality.
Okay, joining us on the other end of the line is State Senator Tanya Shootmaker. And she is a state senator out of Lawton, running for attorney general. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Kyle.
Well, I just got a new email from you and your campaign, and it seems like you're setting your sights squarely on Dana Nessel, the presumed Democratic attorney general nominee. Is it too presumptive to be taking shots at her right now? You still got a convention you got to get through.
Well, I'm doing both, but I think it's also important that we stick up, or we advocate for the best candidate that's going to take on Dana Nessel. And so I think there's a clear contrast between myself and Dana Nessel.
Is there an argument to be made that when you look at the Democratic ticket, and as it's shaping up right now, it's all women on the top of the ticket with Debbie Stabenow, presumably Gretchen Whitmer, Dana Nessel, Jocelyn Benson, that the Republicans should really think about a diverse ticket? Is that worth making the argument, or is that being a little too shallow?
Certainly, Republicans don't play identity politics like Democrats do. But what I will say is that I am the most qualified candidate running in this race on the Republican ticket. And so not only do I beat my opponent in terms of qualifications, but I also am a woman. And so Dana Nessel won't be able to use the woman card against me.
And that, I can understand, would be a selling point. And you talk about being the most qualified candidate probably in either party. You take a look at the qualifications of your opponent, though. He has worked for the Attorney General's office and the Genesee County Prosecutor's office. How do you match up as far as your experience in regards to that?
Well, I have been an attorney for over 24 years. I also have private sector experience handling all different areas of the law. We think that the Attorney General only does criminal matters, when that's farther from the truth. Most of it is actually civil work. I think the attorney general only handled somewhere between 10 and 20% in terms of criminal cases. The other part of the docket would be handling civil cases or issuing attorney general opinions or making sure that the administrative boards that the attorney general represents for the state of Michigan are doing their job as well. And so I feel like I'm the most qualified when it comes to looking at all areas of the attorney general's office. Not just criminal.
We, of course, here in Lansing know of you as being a part of the state Senate going on 8 years and then the state House before that. But before that, give our listeners a bit of a history lesson into what Tanya Schutmaker did prior to that.
Well, when I was in law school, I actually worked for the Cass County Prosecutor's Office. I also worked in the Supreme Court underneath Justice Dorothy Comstock Riley. And then after becoming an attorney, I was in private practice for over a decade, and as a managing partner, so a small business owner as well, and for over a decade handling in a general practice, which handles every kind of case under the sun except for probably patent and a law. And so I feel like in terms of having a broad range of experience, that is me.
Now, I was able to see the debate that you had with your Republican opponent, Tom Leonard, at the North Oakland County Republicans. Have you guys happened to have any more joint appearances since then?
Every night there's some sort of picnic or something going on in terms of being out with delegates, and so we are together quite a lot. No formal debates have been scheduled since that. We have had one candidate forum over in Holland.
Would you like more debates and forums?
You know, I've not been afraid to say if whether it's Tim Skubick or stateside they want to interview us, I'm happy to participate in that.
Now, it looks like, though, he's been a little reluctant to at least go on off the record with Tim Skubick. Do you think he's afraid to debate you?
I don't know what his reasons, but if he can't debate me on Tim Skubick's show, then how is he going to be a strong candidate to go on and take the Democrats, Dana Nessel? It's also my understanding that both Dana and Nessel and I have been on stateside, and he's refusing to go on stateside.
I guess clearly that you would be open to going on any of those programs and debating him. How do you think the first debate went with you and him in the North Oakland exchange? It seemed like you guys had some, well, you had some words about how he's been running the state house. Have you gotten any blowback from that?
No blowback whatsoever. I think it was a healthy exchange of ideas, and that's what primaries or convention races are all about, is a healthy exchange of ideas and pointing out somebody's record, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure we have the strongest candidate to go on and take on Dana Nessel.
Because you're concerned he's been using his office for political means, climb the ladder.
One of the first times I heard him speak at the Shiawassee Lincoln Day dinner, he said, number one priority of a good speaker is to bring back a majority. And I don't understand how he is going to bring back a majority while also campaigning for himself, using his position to raise huge amounts of money, you know, rather than focus on bringing back a majority. You know, I had to serve in the minority under Democrat control, so I understand how precious majority is, and that you don't want to be in minority, because under minority you have huge problems when it comes to having bad policy. When I took over in the state Senate, in state Senate from Kalamazoo in 2010, Michigan had a high unemployment rate of over 14%. Now our unemployment rate is below 5%. And that's all because we have had majority and been able to affect great conservative principles and have moved Michigan forward.
Last question I'm going to ask on this subject before moving on. That income tax vote that he took in February of 2017, you think that was a political vote, knowing that the Senate and the governor wasn't really interested in going down that route?
You know, I don't know what was going through his mind, but certainly a good speaker never puts up a vote for it to fail and throw 12 of his caucus members under the bus. And so I really feel that if he really wanted an income tax cut built it into the budget, a good speaker makes sure that they have the number of votes before they put something up on the board. And to work for good fiscal policy, I'm not opposed to a tax cut, but let's put that into the budget. I've had to make the difficult decisions of cutting $1.5 billion out of the state budget when we came in 2010, and I did so because I didn't believe in raising taxes, but we built it into the budget and made that part of the fiscal policy.
Let's talk a little bit about the Office of Attorney General. Obviously, the thing that is consuming that office right now is the prosecution of various officials in the Flint water crisis. How do you see yourself approaching that upon taking office? Would you just continue the route that the Attorney General is going right now, or would you do a review and consider making some adjustments on the prosecutions?
What I have said about all ongoing investigations, whether it's the Flint prosecution or the MSU investigation, is that it would not be prudent, because it is an ongoing matter, for me to comment on that, and I will stand by that.
Well, let's talk about some of the other things that we've seen from prior attorney generals, maybe this one in particular, but weighing in on things that are going on the national front and getting involved in lawsuits that some would argue are kind of political in nature, be it those connected to the environment or abortion or what have you. How important do you think that is for the Attorney General to get the state involved in those types of things?
You know, what I have said is that I will be a rule of law Attorney General and approach it pursuant to the rule of law and enforce the rules of law as passed by the legislature, regardless of what the issue is. And if the legislature passes something, I will enforce that rule of law.
Do you see the Attorney General being the governor's attorney?
I believe the Attorney General is actually represents the state of Michigan. So as it pertains to the governor in his official capacity as the state of Michigan, then yes, but not his personal attorney, no.
So the offices, as far as you're concerned, are still separate?
That's correct.
What is the most concerning thing as you're taking a look at Dana Nessel and her qualifications? What is it that concerns you the most about her possibly being the next AG?
She has expressed radical liberal views on sanctuary cities, hating men, standing with fringe pro-abortion elements of our society. And I don't think you can get more left. In fact, as I go out and talk to Democrats that have now become Republicans, they're like, the Democrat Party has left me. And I think it's an example of all this new brand of Democrats that are even farther left than Bernie Sanders.
There is a lot of concern on the left right now about what's going to happen with the U.S. Supreme Court once Kavanaugh is confirmed, and presuming that he is. And what's going to happen with abortion? How abortion is regulated in the country moves back to the states, how it used to be. Currently in the state of Michigan, we have a law against abortion. How would you proceed if you were Attorney General on that front, presuming that that's what happens, that this gets shoved back into the purview of the states?
The rule of law Attorney General, I will enforce whatever the legislature does. As you brought up, we do have a law saying that abortion is illegal in the state of Michigan. And so until that law is changed, I will not do anything as Attorney General on that matter.
And then I wanted to ask you, has anybody approached you about the possibility of running for lieutenant governor? I know that this is a very irksome subject for you, but I feel like I do have to ask if anyone's approached you about that.
Nobody has ever approached me except for a straw poll up on Mackinac that had my name on there. Thanks, Kyle.
I guess we're kind of responsible for that, aren't we?
I don't know. I'll let the viewer decide for themselves.
But again, for the record, you're not interested in that job at all. You're interested in being Attorney General.
I am running to be Michigan's next Attorney General, and nobody has approached me, and I've not entertained the idea whatsoever.
Who are you supporting for governor?
I think we have several well-qualified candidates running for governor. I think we will present the strongest ticket, and so the voters will decide on Tuesday who that person will be next governor, and I think whoever they choose will be a fabulous governor.
Is it fair to say you've made up your mind personally, but you're not willing to talk about it publicly?
I am not weighing into that, and I've said that publicly numerous times.
Okay. Is it difficult, considering that you actually serve in the Senate with one of the candidates, you see one of them as the presiding officer in the Senate, and then, you know, presumably you've also worked with the Attorney General on various other subjects in the legislature?
Well, and don't forget, I know all of them. We're all kind of on the same circuit, so to speak, and so I do hold them all in very high respect.
Has that race gotten bit more nasty than you expected?
You know, I'm so focused on my own life that I have not really watched a lot of TVs these days, and so
okay.
I don't know. I hear from other people that bits and pieces about it, but I personally have not really seen a whole lot of TV these days.
Do you have any opinions on John James versus Sandy Pensler?
I do not. I'm not getting involved in any other race. I'm running to be Michigan's next attorney general and putting all my efforts into that.
Very good. Tanya Shoemaker, state senator from Lawton, running for attorney general for the state of Michigan, and that's going to be decided weekend of August 25 and 26th at the Republican State Convention. Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Scott Dean, Tanya Shoemaker, John, Jack, and Mike, and also AT&T for sponsoring this and every other podcast. All right, so Jack, how late are you going to stay up to see who wins the races on Tuesday?
Well, I could probably stay up pretty late. I'll come down here and bug you guys sometimes. And
that's what I was hoping to hear, because then we can put them to work, Mike.
Okay.
We can always use Jack. He can type up something for us.
Type a brief, put this thing down someplace, say, hey, look, you want me to call that... that clerk for you or something like that.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for offering, Jack. We'll take you up on that. I think it's going to be a late night, Mike, as it usually is, but we'll have all the results. We'll have various stories. So I hope you're ready for a late night.
I've covered many, many elections, but this will be the first election that I've been working at MERS, so it'll be interesting to see how it works around here.
You know, the coffee will be going, and fun fact, Mike, did you know that the coffee consumption at MERS has risen threefold since you started? Did you know that?
Why am I not surprised? Newsrooms run on coffee, and if you don't have coffee or Diet Coke in the newsroom, then you don't have fuel for the news.
All right, until next time.
By the way, that has nothing to do with why I would show up.
Right, no, of course not. No, of course not. Well, until next week, I'm Kyle Moore. Take care.
Billy McCluskey from Palm Springs reporting for NBC Sports of America. 20 seconds to the start of the 31st party of the race on Hudson.